Christina Bryan Fitzgibbons, a genetic and family investigator.
And I'm Jody Klugman-Rabb, a licensed marriage and family therapist and licensed professional clinical counselor. Welcome to Sex, Lies, and the Truth.
The term NPE, non-paternal event, or the more accepted term, MPE, misattributed parentage, comes about from a few different sources, including donor-conceived persons, late discovery adoptees, conception from affairs or sexual assault, and now swinging. Christine's story has an element that's just not talked about much. Like bisexuality, swinging is sort of looked upon awkwardly in the LGBTQ+ universe, not really fitting into a clear category, but certainly challenging norms and not without its consequences. Julie's conception story is timely in the nation's contemporary discussion of sexuality and race.
Hi, I'm Christine Jacobson, and I'm a multidisciplinary artist, mother, wife, counselor, and nurse in another lifetime. I was born in 1952 to Jack and Judy Jacobson. At least that's what my birth certificate says. And I have been an only child. I was always an only child. I lived my entire life in Queens, New York. I have to say that I did have a privileged middle-class upbringing. I got to go to camps, traveled with my parents. My father, my birth certificate father, was a sound engineer for motion pictures. So at a very early age, I was following him onto movie sets and sound stages and had a lot of fun with that. But it was one of those things that it wasn't something that I could easily talk to my friends about. There was a certain amount of jealousy. So it was one of those things that made me feel outside of the normal. That feeling of feeling like an outsider was my mother's alcoholism became very problematic when I was about 11 years old. So those things together, I think, helped me to feel different from the other kids in my neighborhood. I must say that there's a third thing that definitely made me feel different, and that is that my parents were swingers. And, of course, that was not something that I was going to be able to talk to my friends about. And I believe that that is that lifestyle that they led is how I came to be in this world. So when I was 16, my parents were still having this open type of marriage. And my mother had a boyfriend, and my mother and father and I were all living in the house, but the boyfriend would be there during the day. And one day I came home from school and we were playing checkers, the boyfriend and I. And this relationship that my mother was having with him was problematic. My father was not happy about it. I think in a swinging lifestyle, it's a one-night stand. It's not meant to be an ongoing relationship.
Let's do a little primer on the lexicon of sexual practices informing Christine's story. The lifestyle, in quotes, typically refers to a recreational approach to sex with multiple partners, where healthy communication and expectations in a primary relationship include these multiple partners, but not always the same partners or in any long-term capacity. Swinging is the Swinging is the practice of exchanging partners within a couple. This is somewhat different from polyamory, where there are long-term relationships with multiple partners and everybody is on the same page, in agreement. Christine did not describe an open polyamorous relationship since her father did not like what was going on.
So I would hear my father say things. He would query me about whether Bill, my mother's boyfriend, was in the house that day. One time my father said something that I repeated that day when I was playing checkers with Bill because I had lost and Bill was really goading me about how many times he had beat me in checkers. And I said, oh, you know what? You just only like my mother because she's white. And he said, what do you know? You don't even know that your father's black. And I was stunned. And I had no idea what he was talking about. And my mother started screaming, "Bill, you promised you weren't going to tell." And she was forced to sit me down and talk to me about her doubts about who my biological father was. She wasn't sure, but she had kept a show business type picture of a light-skinned dancer from the Bahamas for 16 years. And she pulled it out and showed it to me. And she said, "I think this might be your father." And that evening when my birth certificate father came home, I told him what had happened. I was shocked about it. And he said, "Oh, that's ridiculous. You look too much like my mother for that to be true." And that was okay with me that he said that. And we never talked about it again. My mother never brought it up again. I never brought it up to her. My father never spoke about it again. And they went to their graves with whatever knowledge they had about that. So that was when I was 16. Flash forward to another 50 years, and I decided to do a DNA test. And the first one that I did was with Ancestry.com, and it came up that I had 25% West African heritage, which was different from the 100% Danish that I felt I had was part of me for my entire life. But it was still difficult for me to accept the results and accept what it meant about my biological, about my birth certificate father.
Like several of our guests, Christine didn't know what to do about the results after she had them. For 18 months, she sat with them in the background, reaching out occasionally to the distant relatives showing up as matches. Unfortunately, many of them didn't respond. As is often the case with DNA discoveries and with artists, the information finds a way out. In Christine's case, it was through her art.
I was drawing pictures of African women with head wraps, and I was making sculptures with women with head wraps. And at some point, I realized that I didn't have the medical history. I didn't have the correct medical history. And some other friends were doing 23andMe to get that kind of medical history. And so I decided to do the same thing. And lo and behold, I connected with a first cousin. And that was very close. And when I reached out to her on the site, she responded back. And very quickly, she was able to identify who my biological father was. And because he was a minor celebrity in his time, and his parents were minor celebrities in their time, I was able to find a great deal of pictures and information about them on the internet and in newspapers.com. And that was the beginning of my identity crisis, I'll have to say, that even though I had been given that hint when I was 16 years old, because we went into denial as a family, and because in 1968, it was so difficult to deal with race and mainly to deal with the idea that my birth certificate father, who was, you know, the strong one in the home and the man that I loved, the man who gave me everything, that he might not be my father. That was something that I really couldn't look at. And it still is difficult for me to look at that. It's still difficult to think about what did he know, because I do imagine the conversation between my mother and my birth certificate father when she was pregnant with me. I wonder if he asked her, "Well, do you know whose it is?" Because if you're having a swinging lifestyle, that's got to be something you're prepared for. And apparently she had pregnancies before me. And she would tell me often that she chose to keep me. She had had abortions in the past, but she chose to keep me. But I'll never know about any of that. And that's one of the hardest things, I think, for some of us NPEs, is that all the parties are deceased. And there are questions that we just will never have the answers to.
Now that we've done several seasons of the show, and I work with MPEs as clients in my practice, as well as teaching other mental health professionals how to work with DNA discoveries, anecdotally, we have noticed a universal response that MPEs without information fare worse in the adjustment than those that learn information and/or meet biological relatives. It is extremely difficult to move on and adjust to new identities if you don't have information to foster that adjustment.
So, what happened after I discovered the identity of my biological father? Of course, I went looking for family. I spent a lot of time in the New York Public Library, and I spent a lot of time on the internet. I just was obsessed. Ultimately, I found that my biological father was pretty free with his sperm, I guess we would have to say, and not the kind of man that really hung around to find out if he had children or to raise them or support them in any way. So I may have 6 or 7 siblings, and that was pretty amazing to find out while I was going through my identity crisis. I did find a woman in another part of Queens that I believed to be my half-sister, and I went knocking on her door to ask a complete stranger, "Are you my sister?" Amazingly, she opened the door and welcomed me with open arms. And that was a joy. That was amazing to know that I had a sister in the world. She ultimately spent some time with me when I discovered another thing about my biological father, our biological father. And that was that he was a Marine in World War II. And he was part of a cohort of Marines that were known as the Montfort Point Marines. They were the first Black Marines to be allowed to serve in the Marines, period. They endured. They were sent to a segregated base camp in North Carolina, and they struggled with racism. And in 2012, President Obama and Congress awarded the whole cohort of those Black Marines the Congressional Gold Medal. And I thought, well, he's deceased, my biological father, but can he receive that medal posthumously? And I worked very hard to make that happen. My sister and I were at a ceremony in Queens where we were awarded the Congressional Gold Medal and plaques. And it was an amazing experience. And it was a way that I was able to honor my biological father without ever having met him. So that's the journey that I've been on.
That's not the only journey Christine's been on. Eventually, she put herself on a plane to the Bahamas, where she found distant family of the mystery father from her parents' swinging days.
And they were very open and welcoming, and that's just been a joy. I'm very lucky in that I had positive experiences reaching out to people that I'm related to my genetic cousins and sister. There is some downside. Since my book came out, since the article in the Wall Street Journal came out, there's been a kind of a freeze with my cousins in the Bahamas. I haven't really been able to get them to respond to email messages. So, you know, some of that excitement, I don't know what happened with them, to be honest with you. And since I can't get them to respond, there's nothing I can do about that. My half-sister, I hear from her maybe once or twice a year. And the first cousin that really started this whole journey for me, I've never met her. I've never seen what she looks like. She doesn't share pictures with me, but she will call maybe 4 times a year, and we'll talk about the family, and she'll identify who the different people are. So she gives me a lot of information. She's the keeper, I feel, the gatekeeper. She has all the information. She actually lived with my biological father and my biological grandmother. She's a point of frustration for me. And I think that probably is also very common amongst us MPEs that, you know, the relationships, if you can build them, sometimes are fragile. You know, it's, I feel like I'm walking on tiptoes with her because I don't want to lose her. I don't want to risk her just not ever returning my phone calls. So that's also, I think, what I've learned is not uncommon for NPEs.
It is extremely common for NPEs to walk the tightrope of managing the desire for information and acceptance from the new bio family, with temperance and acceptance from the social and maternal families. We all seem to have experienced various levels of that.
So the other part of my journey is that I was a dancer. As I said, I'm a multidisciplinary artist, but I was a performing artist in the 1980s. I was in a hit show called 42nd Street. And I found out that my biological father was a dancer, which was what my mother had told me. Maybe that's why I pursued it. And that my biological grandfather and grandmother were a famous dance duo during the Harlem Renaissance. They were called the Negro Astaires. That's how they were known. And there's just some fabulous pictures in libraries and online of them dancing and in their costumes. So this synchronicity, I feel, of them being dancers and me choosing dance has just been kind of wonderful, really, to discover. My parents were very open about their sexuality, and I think that I have to explain about Danish people when I talk about that, because to put things in perspective, the Danes legalized abortion in 1939, and they decriminalized homosexuality in 1940. They're very open about their sexuality, and my parents definitely were like that and brought that sensibility with them when they immigrated to the United States after World War II. So I was aware, because there was quite a bit of nudity around the household. Playboy magazine was always on the coffee table from the time I was, I don't know, 6, 7 years old. So they were very open about that. And I had an awareness, obviously, that that's not something that I'm going to be sharing with my friends. I'm not going to be talking about that in the neighborhood, because we lived in a very traditional white Anglo-Saxon Protestant neighborhood. But they would take great care to send me to a neighbor's house for a sleepover when they were engaging in their parties. And they would, so I knew about it. And I accepted it as normal, because that's what was going on in our household. But obviously a part of me knew that not normal, and don't talk to the neighbors about it. Like alcoholism, you know, you're not going to talk to the neighbors about that. I had to do a lot of research about swinging, because I think it was just one of those things that I accepted as a child and rejected as an adult for myself.
So Christine compartmentalized the strange things, the unwelcome things in society, like there's a light-skinned Bahamian dancer that may be your father. The denial is so strong for Christine that she's able to divorce herself from it entirely, requiring her to do extensive research when it came time to write her book.
And the reason I wrote the book was to try to make sense of what I was feeling and the crisis that I was going through. I've come to realize that swinging is, as I said earlier, it's a one-night stand. It's not meant to be a long-term relationship. Like polyamory is, where couples are having separate extracurricular relationships, but they're not necessarily bringing them into the home. I think also that being raised in that household, there was a lot of shame that I carried around. A lot of shame about my mother's alcoholism, and a lot of shame about that lifestyle that they lived as well. And finding out the truth of my heritage really released a lot of that shame for me. And the last 4 years have been a process of me being open about my background, being open about my childhood and what I've discovered now as an adult. And that has really freed me. It has helped to shed the shame enormously. And then the other aspect is about my ethnicity. So I wanted to be Black once I discovered that my biological father was Black, and that I had this really strong African heritage. And I went about things in pretty much the wrong way. I got some head wraps to put on, and I got some African clothing to wear. And my son, who is 33 years old, he gently pointed out to me that, Mom, that's like appropriation. You putting these things on, you know, that's not going to make you black. You're never going to be black because you haven't been raised and you haven't had the black experience. But I just felt this affinity towards African culture for so many years and Afro-Caribbean culture and music. And I had even married a biracial man prior to my husband now of 40 years, my Italian husband of 40 years. But prior to that, I had been married to a biracial man, and I was always drawn to that. Now, what I struggled with in terms of my identity was that the biological pull. And again, my son would point out, Mom, there's no dance gene, you know, so there's no pull that way. But was it a biological pull, or was it because in the household that I was raised in, blacks were idolized, blacks were fetishized. And my parents loved black musicians. My parents loved black people. They were mainly the people that they would bring home and have their parties with. So was I recreating that and being drawn to that because of my upbringing, or was it something innate within me? And that's something that I'm still struggling with to this day.
Christine dove into research on racial identity, learning about theory and trying to connect with her people, only to learn she had internalized racism.
I was shocked. Here I am, a child of these parents that, you know, loved black people, that supported the civil rights movement, that seemed to be so left-leaning and progressive, yet I have absorbed internalized racism. And that has been something that I'm very glad that I found out about and that I am continuing to explore. I have joined an anti-racism group with a few other white women, and we read books and try to recognize our own misperceptions, biases. And I feel like that's something that I need to do at this point to understand my duality, because yes, I'm a white woman. I've lived 65 years as a white woman. I look like a white woman. And yet, no, my father is black. So what does all of that mean? What does race mean? What does skin color mean? And it means different things to different people. I'm very happy that there are some Facebook groups where I can explore that issue, and that I'm willing to say out loud, you know, I'm biracial and I'm proud of it. I'm a white woman. I'm proud of that. And this is me. I'm Technicolor. I have a hard time with anger. That's an emotion I don't tap into very easily. In writing about my mother, who I should, I feel, sometimes have the most anger towards, I feel nothing but sadness for her. And I feel really sad that she had to keep that first for those first 16 years. And then that the people in her life that she loved denied her reality, and she had to continue to deny her reality for the rest of her life. I feel very sad about that. I think, yeah, I feel more sadness and regret that I didn't get to meet my biological father or grandparents, that I don't really know the other possible siblings, you know, that I haven't had that lifelong relationship. And I have had those feelings as an only child anyway, you know, that I felt that I had missed out on having those kinds of connections with people in my life.
One of those possible connections was with a brother who had died. That brother's daughter had been reaching out to find family. They connected on Facebook, and Christine refers to her as her niece, feeling very close. As is customary in the NPE world, once you find assumed matches, you have them take a test to confirm that match. Occasionally, the matches are not biological, as was the case for Christine and her niece.
So I had a lot of feelings about that, because here I am. She says I brought awareness to her, but the reality is I opened up the NPE can of worms for her. And she's now on the journey of trying to find out who her biological father is. That is like the closest. The other siblings were with so many other different women that I don't think they know about each other. And for sure, they don't know about me. There's one sibling that my biological father actually had a relationship with, and I believe he supported to some extent. And she's in Europe somewhere, and I have not been able to track her down. That's what's happened with the sibling situation. The cousins, like I said, the distant cousins in the Bahamas, that I don't know really what's going on with that relationship. They lost interest. I don't really know. But they were very welcoming when we went down there with wonderful pictures of being with them, and they treated us like royalty. And so I don't really know what happened with that. The Wall Street Journal, the journalist was, you know, pretty pushy about reaching out to my cousins to get a quote from them or to have a picture. They wanted to have a picture with my sister refused. There was another cousin that I found that they wanted to interview, talk to. She refused. So I don't know if it was because they don't like the Wall Street Journal, but there was quite a bit of pressure on the part of the Wall Street Journal. And they gave me front page, unbelievable, and clickbait on the online version. The title of the article was White Woman Searches for Her Black Family. I don't know if they saw that. I mean, it was intimidating to me. I mean, as it started getting down to the wire, it was very intimidating thinking about the comments that may have been attached to that article. And I was very worried about that. And they were very, very kind, and they stopped all commenting. Yeah, it did have an impact. And several people that had known my biological father reached out to have contact with me and share photos and memories and stories. So, yeah, that was pretty wonderful.
We asked Christine what felt unfinished, particularly around her parents.
I think I would ask my birth certificate father, when did you know? And what did you do with that information? How did you compartmentalize it? Because I do feel like he knew. I don't know if I would ask my mother anything. I think I would just tell her that I forgive her and that I'm sorry she had to go through her life not being able to speak her truth. It is difficult. My mother was a narcissist. I have no doubt about that. I'm a very forgiving person, maybe too much so. I look for understanding. And when I think about mothers in the 50s and 60s, and maybe even in the 70s, being a single mother, what a challenge. I do feel like I missed out. I think that was actually the first feeling that I had. One of the movies that I found to help me try to figure out what was going on was called Little White Lie. And it's about a woman, I think her name is Lacey, but she wrote it, directed, starred in it. And she was raised as a white woman, a Jewish white woman, until she went to college when the college students said, you know, you're black, basically, they told her. And she went through this process in college of being part of the Black Student League or the African American Club. And I felt jealous that she was able to have that experience as a young woman, that she could be part of a group of people that would show her what life for an African American was like in this country. She could study it in school and really immerse herself in, you know, the literature of great African Americans from the 1900s till now. I did feel like I had missed out on that. Like, oh, you know, I got to go back to college. I have to go get an undergraduate degree or a graduate degree in African American history. And I feel like that's what I've been doing. That's the journey that I've been on, is trying to immerse myself in African-American culture in any way, shape, or form that I can. I'm having a racial reckoning at the same time that our country is having a racial reckoning. It's kind of great, I think. I do miss it. I do, you know, I did miss out on having it when I was younger, but I'm doing it now.
The honesty our guests bring to these episodes is so valuable. Thanks to Christine for sharing her story.
Sex, Lies, and the Truth is written and produced by Jody Klugman-Rabb and Christina Bryan Fitzgibbons. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the show, you can contact us through our website at www.sexliesandthetruth.com.
If you are a fan of Sex, Lies, and the Truth and want to support us, you can do that through Patreon. Patreon is a really cool platform where fans of shows like ours can pledge a small amount each month, even just a few dollars, to support the show. You can find us there at www.patreon.com/sexliesandthetruth.